Who did they send?
They send 12 people. They send 12 people. Who are these people?
The head of the tribes.
Right. They're basically the head of the tribes. You're sending 12 of your best and your brightest people. The 12 best and brightest. Right? So you're starting with the greatest of the great. You're starting with the greatest of the greatest of the Jewish people. People that represent what? And should represent what?
Excellence.
Righteousness. The hopes and what? The dreams of the Jewish people. If they are the leaders, in essence, what do you look at when you're looking for a leader?
A role model.
Vision.
A role model, a mentor, vision. A person that's got leadership. What is it meant by leadership? A person that has a vision to fulfill the goals and desires and destiny of its people. So ideally, you have chosen the best and the brightest. And honestly, even the Torah calls them anashim before they actually go out. Kulam anashim, it says, all of them were people. We know they're people. What did they send? Aliens? You know, they're not sending aliens. Why does the Torah have to tell us? And they were all, you know, people.
Like as in mensch, like anashim?
Right, so that the commentators describe that before they left, they were incredibly important people. They're incredibly important people. So right before they went out on their mission, they are really representing who the Jewish people are, who the dreams, the goals, and the destiny. They are these type of people. So they go on this journey, and they come back, and they're meeting now with the Jewish people. So what happens? So they go for 40 days, and they come back, and they give this report. So they say, starts off, we'll say like this. It says, and they came to give the report and to all the Jewish people, to Moshe, to Aaron, and to the entire group of the Jewish people. They went from different parts, the Paran, the Kadesha, different parts of Israel, and basically toured all around. And they saw the entire beauty of the land of Israel, which most of you have come back and seen. And now they're speaking and they say, we came to the land of Israel, and it's in it, and as you sent us, and it is a land of milk and honey. Zavat chalav v'dvash. Hu v'zepiria. And it's like blossoming. It's beautiful. It's a good start, right? First thing that they're saying, it's a beautiful land. It's milk and honey. By the way, it's date milk, not cow milk. But anyway, important for now, right? Yeah, it's milk. And it's fruitful. It's a beautiful land. It's amazing, right? And then they say what? And we came to land and Ephes, ki az am, and Ephes, they are nothing. It's like nothing. Nothing is the power of the nations that are there, that are dwelling there. They're sitting in massive towers. They're children of giants we saw there. And also Amalek. Amalek, remember Amalek? The Nazis.
Yeah.
The form of the Nazis are there. Mm-hmm. They're dwelling in the land. And they're sitting in the Negev, in the south. And then we have these other massive people, Kananim, which are strong people. They're sitting by the sea. So you see how it's starting to get a little bit more. Starting to go downhill a little bit, right? Everyone following me? Mm-hmm. Stay with me. Stay with me. It's a critical point. Starting to go downhill a little bit. And I'm going to skip one line because we'll go back to this because there's two people that jump in really, but really it's one. And quiets him down because he's already feeling that something is about to happen. Mm-hmm. and we'll go back to him in a second. And we're going to continue. It says, and the people, it uses the same language, v'anashim, the people that, that toured, the same language, those important people that toured, they that went up with us, they said, we can't do it. We can't do it. We can't go up. Why? Because they're stronger than us. Because they're stronger than us. And if you look at what they say, they saw, they looked and they saw there were powerful people there. And it says that Eretz Ochelet Yoshevea, and the land eats up its inhabitants. And there's powerful people there. And we saw giants. And we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. And it was like that. It says, I'm going to restate it. They were grasshoppers. We were grasshoppers in Be'enenu, in our eyes. And it was like that in their eyes. So let me recap so it's clear. They come back, starts off great. How was it? Amazing land, flowing milk and honey. It's a powerful place. It's got a lot of potential. Very, Piria means fruitful, but like, meaning fruitful in the essence of it's got a lot of potential. There's a lot of potential and resources in that place. However, we got a big problem. There's massive encampments, towers, borders, and the people, you have the Nazis there. You have giants there. You have massive encampments of people that are incredibly strong. And I don't think we can do it. I don't think we can conquer them. We don't have the power. And not only that, the land itself eats up its inhabitants. So much so that in the end, they say, we look, we felt, in essence, let me translate it, we felt like grasshoppers in their eyes. And it was such that they looked at us as grasshoppers. That's the description. What is screaming out to you from this description? What is their major, major problem? What is the major single problem that these people have?
They lack courage.
Lack courage.
They're outnumbered.
They're outnumbered.
Their belief is gone.
They're what?
They have no belief.
They have no belief.
They have no confidence.
Yeah.
They have no
confidence.
Everyone hear that? They have no confidence. In essence, we can boil it down to what? They're afraid. They're scared.
Back in the slave mindset.
Right? They're scared. So you know what happens next? You know what happens next? You know what Hashem tells?
You have something to be scared of.
Whack. Smack. You guys are crying? It says, that was what we've discussed this. You guys are crying for nothing? Meaning the next thing is that the entire Jewish nation starts to cry. The entire Jewish nation starts to cry. And Hashem promises... Again, using the oral law, we've discussed this. Hashem promises you cried that night, you're going to cry for eternity going forward. And that's Tisha B'Av. So let's focus on understanding what is going on here. It doesn't make any sense. The people all of a sudden are afraid, and now... What's going to happen? You're going to punish him for all generations. Mm-hmm. You're afraid. Is it really a sin? Such a big sin to be afraid? That's how you deal with a person who's really afraid? Doesn't make any sense. And that's the punishment that we're still presently living through till now, Again, we've talked about it. First temple, second temple, the kicking out of Jews from Spain, World War I, World War II, Gaza, all in between. Million Jews killed in the...
Crusades.
Thank you. First Crusade, right? Started on Tisha B'Av. Over a million Jews were killed, right? And then we can go list. There's a list going down. For what purpose? What's the reason? Cause they're afraid, really? What was the sin? What's such a terrible thing that they did? Imagine you're slaves. Let's make it even stronger. You're slaves. You're coming out. You're expected to be like tough warriors now. We're going to go fight the Nazis. We're going to fight giants. We're going to go fight people that have been free all their lives. Makes sense?
No.
And not only that you're going to go fight them, but now you're afraid. So you're going to, you know what? You're afraid? Whack. Because you're afraid, you're going to be punished for all generations. Really?
Can I ask a question?
See this?
No.
Let's see it. Yes, ask it.
Yeah.
Ask it.
Okay.
Your assistant.
So my question is that doesn't it make sense because they just saw the mirror, they witnessed the miracle that happened when they came out of Egypt. So it's like you see such a hard evidence and proof.
I know what you're saying. No. You saw all evidence, but now you're facing reality. You can't be afraid. You can't be a human being. You can't have emotions.
Yeah, but after seeing those miracles,
again, you can't have emotions. You're going to battle. You have to go to battle. You have to go face the Nazi SS. After being in the Holocaust, you're ready for it.
If I would have seen the Red Sea parting, I would have like 1,000% more
and we'll get to that in a second.
Well, they weren't just afraid, right? They actually said that God abandoned us. He took us out of Egypt, out of slavery, just to abandon us here. So it's like they're not clear to God anymore.
But the essence, you can say, I hear you're on to something, but the essence is coming from fear. If you go down to the root, it's the root is fear. So it doesn't make sense simply from the fact of being afraid as the root cause. It's going to cause so much destruction and so much havoc for all eternity. And think about it. It's the most horrific. This day is the most horrific day on the Jewish calendar by far. There's no other worse day. So much so that we don't have, you know, it's pretty much agreed upon in Jewish sources. And it comes already from Rashi and other places. But that we don't have, there's a big question in Israel later after the Holocaust was, why are the religious against creating Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Memorial Day? Why? There was over, you know, millions of observant Jews that were wiped out. Mm-hmm. Millions of observant Jews were wiped out. Why were they against it? Against it because Tisha B'Av is the day that we're supposed to commemorate that. Mm. This is the source of all destruction. And that is the day that is the commemoration of it. There shouldn't be another day that will take away from Tisha B'Av. Because if you fix Tisha B'Av, you fix all of Jewish destiny and essence, pain and suffering. So let's try to figure it out. And then in figuring out the hint that we'll go through is actually with what the other two, remember there was 10,
mm-hmm.
right? There was 10 against and two.
Four.
That were against the 10. That were four in essence, right? So there was 12 total. Two that were saying, of course we can go and we're going to do it. And 10 that were against. Mm-hmm. Let's look at what the one person that actually spoke up, right? There was another person that was silent because he was Moshe's student, Yeshua, and that was he had to be silent. He had to be silent because no one was going to listen to him. And the one other person, his name was Kalev, spoke up. So what does he say? He says, he quiets them down. He says, V'has Kalev. He quiets them down as if like, okay, you know what? They don't know if he's a part of the crew of 10 or if he's against them, right? So he quiets them down and he says that, listen up to what this Ben Amram did for us, right? First of all, who's Ben Amram? The son of Amram. Who's the son of Amram? Moshe, Moses. So if you, it's already a trick, by the way, if you can see, right? Why wouldn't he call him?
Because
why wouldn't he call Moshe. Him Moshe? If you're going to call someone by a name, you already know in Hebrew already. I don't want to say bad, not nice terms. But if you're going to say this Ben Amram, right? It already sounds like a bad term, right? You can fill in the blanks, right? So he's already using a trick. This Ben Amram. What do you mean Ben Amram? Call him by his name. It sounds like you're like angry. You know, the son of Amram. You know, he's gonna. You know, we're gonna do with him. So he quiets it down. So the other 10 are obviously okay. Let's hear what he's gonna say. He's gonna really pile it on now, and he says like this. He says this son of Amram. That he starts yelling out. You know what he did? They thought they were going to speak negatively of him, of Moshe. But in his heart, he starts to say, and he says, quiets them down. Why is he quieting them down? He says, Ale v'na'ale. We will go up and we can go up. We will go up and we can go up. And even he says something that's completely doesn't make sense that the Kabbalist we'll dig into right now. Afilu b'shamayim, and even if it's in the stars, v'hu omer asu solomot v'lu sham, make ladders to go up to the stars. Natzliach b'kol dvarav, we will be successful in all of the words, meaning in all of our activities and everything that we can accomplish. Make ladders. And you can go up to the heavens. So the Kabbalists answer, the deepest Kabbalist here on the page, the Gorarie, one of our greatest Kabbalists from the 14th century, asks a very basic question. Very basic question. Why is he talking about impossible things? Why is he talking about just random impossible things? You know what? We're going to start screaming. Now we're going to convince him. If Moshe, if Ben Amram tells us we can go up to the heavens and we have to build ladders to go to the heavens, we'll do it. That sounds like a convincing argument to you? Sounds like a convincing argument? Here you got a whole people. You have everyone that's afraid and scared. Everyone's scared out of their wits. You're going up to face the Nazis. You're going to face giants, massive behemoth football players, right? And you're this, you know, tiny Jews that just got out of the Holocaust in Egypt. And you're scared to death, right? You're scared to death. And all of a sudden, you got this guy coming, you know what? We can do it. Okay, it sounds good. We can do it. Yeah, it starts nice. But you know what we can do? Even if we have to go up to the heavens, and the stars build ladders and go up there, we'll be successful. Does that sound like a good pep talk to get you out of your fear?
Sounds confident.
Sounds confident, but it sounds like, you know, you're nuts.
Right.
You're in the stars, buddy. Why don't you go up to the heavens? It's not realistic. Says the Maharal to describe exactly this point. Says the Maharal, brings one of the pieces from the oral law that's a cryptic piece, and he says, "Ein mazal l'Israel." There is no such thing as mazal. Now, what is mazal? Now, Someone says fortune. Someone said luck.
You said flow.
The astral predisposition.
What is mazal is astrology in English. But what is astrology? What does that mean, astrology? Now this we're going to have to get a little bit deeper. What is it really astrology? Not the fake stuff.
Not the fake stuff.
The real stuff. Just wait. What is the real stuff? Mazal is literally there are spiritual forces that are run by the stars. There is a reality to astrology. Except those astrologers that are out there, I don't have a clue of what that means. What it means is the spiritual force of how the world is run. Hashem set up the stars, and in essence, however that works, the force and the flow from the stars and the alignments and the movement and spirituality coming from higher words down all the way to our world, they are set. They're set all the way down to your physical DNA and your spiritual DNA. It's set. It's set into force. Except for one force in this planet. Who's that? The Jewish people. Ein mazal le'Israel. There is no mazal. There is no flow through the astrology to the Jewish people. Now we have to go even deeper to understand that. Does that mean we're completely above astrology? We're completely above any aspects in the physical world? Of course not. Of course not. So what does it mean? What does it mean? It means that we have the potential to go above our astrological
predisposition
in this world. We have the ability to go above it. We have the ability to break it. We have the ability to overcome it. Whereas any other nation, any other person on this planet does not. There's a certain predisposition that they are bounded within, and they could be the most righteous of non-Jews. They're stuck within the predisposition of their mazal, of their force in the astrological world. And in essence, says the Maharal, that is why the Jewish people have a double name. We're known as the children of Yaakov, and yet we're also known as, what was Yaakov's other name?
Yisrael.
Yisrael means the struggling with Hashem. What are we struggling with? What is he struggling with? The struggle is to overcome, to go above the mazal, to go above your boundary, to go above the spiritual box that we are all set in. Now, let's try to plug this back in and understand what's going on here. What is the essence, again, of the other 10 and in essence now the entire Jewish people? What's going on here? They're afraid. Mm-hmm. They're gripped by fear. What happens though? What happens with people, right? In essence, going back to the idea and concept of what they're trying to achieve. We're trying to go into the land of Israel, the promised land. What is the promised land? Our dreams, our hopes, our desires in life. You're trying to accomplish it. You're trying to get there. You're trying to go there. Mm-hmm. Every single one of you have dreams, have hopes, have desires, have inspirations and moments in life. What is the main thing, how those things, excuse me, let me start over. How is it that those dreams and hopes and desires, we do not fulfill them? Why?
Fear.
Ourselves.
That was the second day of the allegation.
Fear. And in essence, but how does the fear alone does not necessarily hold you back from those dreams and desires?
Fear of failure?
No.
Not even fear of failure.
Believing in the fear itself.
What does that mean to believe in the fear? What happens? Go into deeper psychologically. What happens? What happens when you're afraid?
You convince yourself it's real.
You convince yourself that what?
The fear is a real thing.
But what does it mean that the fear is a real thing?
That you can't do it.
I can't do it, but why? Why can't I do it? If it's a dream, if it's something I need to accomplish, mm-hmm. I know it's there. I know it's good for me. I know it's something I want in my life. I know it's something that's healthy for me. I know it's something that is going to make me happy. Whether it's going to be a successful marriage, whether it be a successful business, whether it be personal development and growth, whether it be becoming who we're supposed to become as individuals, what holds you back from accomplishing?
The belief that failure is real.
The belief, no, that it's not even the belief of the failure, because that won't hold you back. That won't hold you back. What is it? Let's see, watch what they do. Watch what these 10 people did. They say, they first start with Ephes. Ephes means, in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, means what?
Zero.
What is it? When you call yourself, when it means zero, when you're saying zero, which means what?
Nothing.
Zero, nada. When you start saying something's zero, what are you starting to do?
Degrade.
What? Well, someone said it.
Degrade yourself.
Not degrade yourself, but?
Your work.
Deny what? Deny the dream itself. When you're starting to, what are you doing? You know it's a real dream. You know it's the real something you really want to accomplish. You know it's something that's going to really make you happy. But you start to do what?
Doubt.
Doubt and more so, deny the dream. The next step is actually going further. What did they say? At first they're saying it's a powerful land, potential, tremendous potential. Then they say what?
Impossible.
Not only it's impossible, but the what?
It's not even a dream. We shouldn't go to
the land eats
the people.
Eats up the people. Wait, you just said it's a powerful land, it's a great land. And now you're saying what? It's eating up the people. It's a land we can't survive in. It will eat up the people. You know what you're saying? You took the dream and what are you doing? You're denying it. Ephes, it's nothing. It wasn't real. It's not really a dream. It's not real something that I want to really accomplish. It's you're denying the essence of the dream. I was dreaming. You know what? I was dreaming. I really was dreaming. Yeah, it's not real. I can't really do it. You know why I can't really do it? Because it's not really worth it. It's not something I really wanted anyway. It's too difficult. And then why is it too difficult? Because you know what? It's you start to pick it apart. You start to look at the negative side. You start to make up negative points. Really, that's not what I wanted. That was a dreamer. I was brainwashed. I don't know. I didn't have that vision. That vision was like from someone else. It was just like a moment thing. I'm not being practical. I'm not really living in this world. You hear this? You hear the idea?
Mm-hmm.
What do you start doing when you don't accomplish your dreams?
Getting frustrated.
You start denying them. You start saying, you know what? Eventually, you know what you start saying? It wasn't really realistic. You know what? I was being naive. I was being immature. It's not something I really wanted anyway. Do you hear the idea? What you do inside of yourself in order that you say that it's not the fear that destroys it. it's inside that just destroys the dream is the ability to deny it, that it ever was really a dream. That it's something that we ever really wanted. Another point is, another key point to how to eliminate your dreams and mm-hmm. hopes mm-hmm. is being distracted. Mm-hmm. What are they doing here? They're focusing on points that are completely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes and was such. What does that have to do with anything? How cares what they look at you and how you look? What does it make a difference at all? Who cares? You have a goal. You have a purpose. These people are in your way. Go right through it. You can do it. You see what happened in history? What we could do? Hashem did it in Egypt. We can do it again. We split the sea. The most powerful nation on the planet. Egypt's destroyed. Of course we can do it. What are we getting involved in? How they look at? We were in their eyes. What is that? It's called distraction. You get distracted. You get involved in things that are take you away from your purpose and your goal. You get involved in things that distract you from really what is the priority in life. Mm. I always hear a lot of times from people, you know, I ask them, you know, like, you can take many examples. You're saying when you're dating the wrong person and you're saying, like, you know, like, why they come to me and say, you know, this and that, and this is the problem, this is the issue. And you look at it and you say, well, move on. It's not fulfilling your purpose or your goal. You know it's not healthy for you, so why don't you move on? Well, there's this aspect and that, and it's fun, and, you know, I don't want to be alone. And what is that?
Fear.
Distraction.
It's the combination of distraction and fear.
Yeah.
I heard a great example from someone that taught at LHA a few months ago in New York, Rabbi Feldman. He said I thought it was a beautiful example of why do the rabbis against going to the clubs? Why is it so bad to go to the clubs? Is it what really we want to prevent you from having fun? What's so terrible about going to a club? Let's be honest. What's so terrible about going to a club? Want to prevent you from having fun? Really? Do you notice? I mean, I haven't been in the club, thank God, in several years.
But you've been.
But I,
several years. It's recent.
But the club, right? The club, what is it? It gets darker and darker. Why is it so dark?
So you can't see.
Why is it so loud and so dark?
Distraction.
So you're distracted. So you're distracted from reality. You're distracted from who you are. It's a distraction. You run there. No one goes there to meet the love of their life. And I've never met anyone that's been in a successful, happy marriage that met at a club. Maybe there are some, but why? Why not? Why not? Why? Because you go there for distraction.
For Dima, his girlfriend.
You're going there for distraction. There's two elements that constantly are showing up in life that are preventing people from achieving their goals, their inspirations, their purpose. The idea is clear. You're missing out from two points. You're either distracted in this crazy world that we're in right now, because mm-hmm. you pick up everything from an iPhone to your iPad to your tablet to your iTouch to Netflix to to marijuana band to you can inject it now with a
what?
Band.
He's teaching us new things.
Right? No, not heroin. I'm saying like whatever. We'll leave it out. No. There's, yeah. Believe it. Leave it. It's a band. No. I don't want to go off topic. What is it today? Today is especially. The whole world is totally into distraction. Mm-hmm. We are distracted at every moment of our life. We cannot sit with ourselves for more than a few minutes without touching the phone. It's an incredible world of distraction, which means we are addicted, but even more so in this idea and concept, we can never get to our dreams and goals. Why do you think people are so depressed in life?
Because they're distracted.
They can never achieve their dreams and goals. Achieve what they really want. Be happy. Meaning a meaningful life, a purposeful life. You can't get it because you're distracted. You're constantly on your phone. You're constantly on some kind of social media. Or you need to be entertained with visual entertainment. Or you need to be in a dark room with a lot of music because you can't be by yourself. And I'll add even one more step. That's step one. And then the first step even above that is even if you can get out of distraction and you can for a moment go and be inspired. I'll use the analogy, go to Israel. And you can be inspired for even a few weeks. And say, wait, life is really greater. There really is meaning. There really is purpose. I can live life on a higher plane. What then knocks that down? Yeah, but it's not practical. Yeah, but that's not really living in this world. What am I going to do about all the practicalities of life? Yeah, you got to be realistic. Come on, you got to be realistic. You got to live in this world. You got to be distracted. Get you back to being distracted. Go back into being distracted like everyone else. Mm-hmm. So even if you can get out of it for a moment and say, no, there really is something higher. There's a purpose. I'm inspired. I can see it. There's meaning. There's depth. There's something that I really want in life. Mm-hmm. What's the next step of the fear? The fear that steps in is the reality is saying, no, it's not even real. That's just a dream. That's not really me. I can't really do it. It's not really. I got swept up in the moment. It's not being real in this world. Come on, you got to live in this world. You get dragged right back down. Mm-hmm. What does Kalev say? Kalev says, of course you can. Even if you have to go up to the heavens. What does it mean, go up to the heavens? You are part of the Jewish people. Does that mean that automatically you're above it? No. Absolutely not. Quite opposite. It says that if you don't go above it, you actually go below where everyone else goes. We'll leave that for a different time. Mm-hmm. So if you go below, if you go to the lowest extreme, mm-hmm. you're stuck in and you can't get out. What does Kalev say? I can go above it. We can go above it. Ale na'ale, of course you can go above it. You not only can, what do you have? You have to. You're obligated. Of course you can and you have to. Because that's the only way that you will be able to succeed and be successful and live a meaningful life and be happy in life. That is the only thing that is available for every Jew. To break out of our shell, to break out of this concept, this box, this jail cell that we've built within us and we are stuck in. And every Jew has to do it. Every Jew has to do it. Now, the language that the Maharal uses is, how do you do it? It's doing mitzvot. Now, you can translate that as, you know, keeping the laws. But if you go deeper, he's not referring to keeping a basic structure of Jewish life. He's going, go to the root. Go to the essence. Go to the, what is the flow? What brings down the flow in life? What is that spiritual flow? In essence, when you go above your nature, in essence, when a person goes above his nature, when you overcome your nature, when you overcome your society, your spiritual DNA, in essence, or your physical DNA, when you're able to overcome it, whether it's because you are stuck in a society that is against development and growth, or whether you internally have created these barriers, when you overcome them, you are immediately breaking out of this physical realm. And you are going higher and higher. So much so that it also changes your, in essence, natural destiny in this world. Your natural destiny in this world. It goes above it. You can now do actual, what would seem impossible and what would seem miraculous, you can actually do it. I'm telling you, it actually happens. And not only that, it's something that is a nice concept, something that is just a nice idea. It's something that we're actually obligated into doing. So much so that if we don't do it, it destroys the world. That's Tisha B'Av. When we erased the dream, we erased the dream for the world. When we were distracted and said, no, we're not going to be involved in our purpose and our goal and our destiny, it changed the whole essence of the trajectory of all of history. So much so that we are still in this pattern till this day. So when it said, when the sages said, when in the generation that it's not rebuilt, when the temple is not rebuilt, it's as if it's destroyed. What does that mean? In our generation, if we don't overcome our boundaries in our lives, in our individual challenges, then it's as if we destroyed it. What does that mean? We then are doing the same actions that they did. We're either denying our dreams and purpose and goals, or we are completely distracted from them. Therefore, every single one of us have to fulfill our dreams, our goals, our purpose, and achieve meaning. It's not an elective, it's an obligation. I want to end, I'm trying to remember the name. There's a beautiful picture here. It's a beautiful picture here of, I don't know if you guys saw it. Here it is. I can't see it. There's a beautiful picture here. If you can, I'll send it around. There's a an old lady, right? I think it was posted in LAJ 16 group chat. But there's an old lady here in the middle. If you see all these people at the Kotel, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. There are 500, 400 people around this woman. Who's this woman? Her name is Shoshana Hovitz. Shoshana Hovitz, what's the story behind this? Shoshana Hovitz is 104 years old. Mm-hmm. On her 104th birthday, she requested from her family to get together, all of them, and meet at the Kotel. And this was the realization of her birthday wish. Right? 104 years old, 400 of her family, including her, she's holding her great-great grandson, who is, I think, whatever he was, 2 years old. She's holding him. And this was actually another 100 that couldn't make it. So she actually has 500. 500.
I thought really bad.
500 different kids and grandkids that all came from this one woman, right? Oh, and 400 showed up.
How many kids
right?
did she have?
So not now? All of them, 500.
No, like
oh, kids, and I don't know. So she actually, what's her story? This is an incredible story. Who's Shoshana Hovitz? Shoshana Hovitz is an Auschwitz survivor. In Auschwitz, she had... Her father was gassed. Her mother was killed and experimented by Dr. Mengele, Yamach Shemo, the doctor in Auschwitz that made experiments on Jewish people. Horrific experiments. She lost everyone. She didn't have one family survivor, not one. Rewind the clock 78 years. 78 years. Shoshana Hovitz is alone in this world. Completely alone. Imagine where she's coming from. She just lost her entire family. She just survived the worst calamity of the Jewish people in thousands of years. What can you imagine her frame, her mind frame? What's her outlook on life?
Depressed. Zero.
I got nothing. Ephes. I got zero. What is life all about? I got it. I lost it all. You got nothing. Mm-hmm. She meets another survivor that also lost his entire family. He actually lost 4 kids and his wife. They themselves... somehow meet and then break a blockade that's trying to stop them from going to the land of Israel. The British blockade. And they go on an illegal ship to Israel and make it to Israel. Settle in Haifa and just start a life. And that life leads to 500 kids. Jewish people that are living Jewish lives. Most of them in the land of Israel. If you can't see that it's possible to break out of your natural world, Shoshana Hovitz, at 104 years old, a Holocaust survivor that lost her entire family, that is able to have 500 offspring living in the land of Israel at 104 years old, celebrating at the Kotel, if you don't see that as a miracle and as an ability to overcome your mazal, overcome your natural destiny, your cosmic destiny to achieve your hopes, your dreams, your desires, this is a practical example. You're looking at the picture of that every Jew can do it. We didn't go through Auschwitz, thank God. We have our own challenges, our own difficulties, our own box that we set up for ourselves. This should be an inspiration to be able to break out of our lives and be able to break through our own mazal, to go above it and achieve and fulfill our dreams and desires. The bigger the dreams and the desires, the bigger the fear. The bigger the fear everyone has. The entire world is out there. Everyone wants to dream and look for something greater. You guys have the ability to actually achieve it. So don't let fear, and in essence, denial of that dream, denial of the inspiration, and even more so, especially in our world, the distraction. The distractions of our life, of daily life, that never lets us actually get into achieving our dreams and goals and desires. Of building a more meaningful life. Let Shoshana be an inspiration. Every single one of you can achieve and break through your mazal. Break through your cosmological barriers. Every single one of you, not only do you're able to do it, you have to do it. Thanks for coming.